Welcome to another Cosmic Circus interview. Not review today. Me and Ben will be back to do another review very soon. We probably have a lot of reviews coming up this week. Be sure to like and subscribe. We're trying to get 1,000 subscribers, so be sure and subscribe on the button below. Today we are having a interview with Colombian filmmaker Gala del Sol. She's got a new movie out at Sundance called Reigns Over Babel, which is a Colombian retro-futuristic. They use the words magical realism take on Dante's Inferno. Now, in our discussion, we talk about God. We talk about love. We talk about the trans experience. We touch on a lot of topics. One of them that kind of surprised me is that she wanted to be a nun, which I think is very interesting considering what this movie is. And I think it makes the conversation in the movie all the more interesting that there's a film made by somebody who wanted to be a nun at one time about the LGBTQ and trans experience. It's a very interesting film. That's all I can say. Now, before you go into it, I want to make sure that you are aware that at one point I kind of messed up. I said, talking about the costume design, and I said Cuban influence. Which is not Cuban, it's Colombian. I know that, but when you're in the middle of an interview, sometimes you make a slip. So I want to apologize on saying Cuban. She's not Cuban, it's Colombian. The movie is very Colombian, and it's honestly, it's a very beautiful looking film. Anyway, here's my interview with Gala del Sol out of Sundance 2025. So first off, I want to say congratulations on your film. I know it's got to be difficult. I've tried making movies before. I know how difficult it can be. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Nobody can take that away from you, no matter what.
Oh, thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it.
So my first question is, can you discuss for anybody out there that's like trying to make movies and figure out how to go about it? You have made a pretty complex film for this budget. How did you go about getting this produced? What was the process like? Did you have any setbacks? Tell me how that one I came about.
Perfect. So, let's see, where do we start? I can start, maybe when we started first, conceiving the film, as a story,
Yeah,
and then go
go
through
for
the
it.
whole process if you like to. Okay. So, it was during the pandemic. I had just returned to Colombia after living in Los Angeles for 6 years. My parents thought the world was ending, basically. And so I returned home in the last flight that got into Colombia before the airport closed. So it was around April 2020. And I
Wow.
was actually going to shoot another feature, which was meant to be my first feature in 2020. And obviously it got canceled because of the pandemic. And so I found myself locked in my room for 20 days without knowing what to do with my life, basically. And I did theater since I was 4 years old, and I still love working with theater actors. And so I called up a friend who moves in the theater circles of the city, and he gathered a group of very talented young actors that I started working with through video calls. But we didn't know that this was going to become a feature film, or we were not, aiming to write a feature or anything. We were just, hanging out through video calls and trying to cope with the existential crisis of the pandemic, basically. And so They do theater, and then my specialty is directing actors for film, and they all wanted to like start getting into film. So we did a series of workshops, and then one of the activities was a character creation exercise where I asked them to create a character that they've always wanted to play and to create a character that helped heal something within them. And so that's literally how it was born. Because like I what I usually say is that it's a film that was made upside down, because first I had the actors, then I had the characters, and then the last thing was the story, because I didn't get into the story till we started like meeting in person and doing improv exercises.
Oh, wow.
And that's when I saw themes, you know, that crossed the characters, because naturally the film is a reflection. We were all between 20 and 25 at the moment, so like we were, you know, like doing these things to help heal what we were going through in a way, you know. So the film is a natural reflection of what this group of 20-year-olds was living during the pandemic. And so obviously for most of us, and personally, you know, like it was a like first time that I truly wondered about like death and illness and all of this, like, you know, like the possibility of my loved ones getting sick, you know. So naturally, you know, like the character that came up that like crosses all of the narrative lines is La Flaca, who is death personified. But it's like a Latin American death, you know, like I wonder like how will the death of my city look like? And my city is very much like gothic tropical, you know, in a way. It's like Cali, Colombia. So, and like also my city is known for its salsa dancing, you know, and the parties and so on. So, of course, the city of Cali wouldn't be like boring or dull or like, you know, like terrifying in a way, or like dark as we usually imagine death, you know, like the death of the seventh seal. Like the way that I imagine her is, you know, like how it turned out to be like this beautiful black woman with a giant afro and yellow bell bottom pants that loves to salsa dance, that doesn't like to do her job, you know, like. She just loves kind of like gambling in like city bars with drunkards, years of life, you know? So that's by all this way, story is about.
Uh-huh. She's my favorite character, by the way. She's my favorite.
Mine too. Yeah. Mine too. I was like, well, if I could bet years of life against death personified, what would she look like? And like, that's what it came out. But yeah, she's my favorite character as well, definitely. And then what happened is we were working for a whole year till I had like the first draft ready. I think we started working April 2020, and then I had the first draft by, I believe, December 2020, January 2020, and then like a solid draft by April of next year, like 2021. I kept working on the script, you know. And actually, fun fact, my parents asked me when I was finishing the script, where did I imagine the premiere, the world premiere to be at? And I said, Sundance.
Congratulations.
Come true.
I got a question about the screenplay. I got a question. You juggle so many characters.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how, like, you know, not a lot of people could do that. Like James Gunn could do that. And some other filmmakers can. I'm wondering how, like, what is your writing process to like, juggle so many people in one film?
Beautiful. Yeah, I love talking about that. So, to me, there's two very important things. One, to have a very clear structure. An arc for the character. So even before I start writing, like I like to have, you know, like my classical hero's journey ready, like know every stage that the character is gonna like go through, you know, like I love doing like mini bios. Also, again, because I come from theater, I love like working alongside other people that I imagine that like who's gonna play them. I love working with actors in that sense. So I build the characters very, very well, you know, and like, sometimes we write, you know, like whole mini scripts of like the characters' lives before we get to write the script itself, you know? So I love doing that and having that very structured. But also to me, it's very important to do this process that I used to do when I was like a teenager, and like when I did a lot of experimental stuff, because I didn't know about like, you know, narrative structure and so on. But I still have something from that, and it's like, I call it the mental vomit. So basically the mental vomit is when I'm drifting off to sleep, you know, like that stage between being awake and being asleep, that your mind starts kind of like puking stuff at you, like images, phrases, words, and so on. To me, that's like golden, you know? So I keep a little notebook that I call the mental vomit book. It's green, actually, under my bed. And I just write like everything that comes up. And also, like, to me, that's a way to like avoid writer's block, because in a way you have the structure, you know, but also you keep it creative and you keep it like spontaneous through this mental vomit practice. Then something magical happened also when I was writing it. And it's like, I did that from like 6 a.m. from the moment that I woke up to the moment that I went to bed. So I actually started dreaming with the characters. You know, like I started dreaming with the world of Babel, which is like my city, but from another dimension. And I say that it's like retrofuturistic tropical punk, because literally that was the city, you know, like I remember like in my dreams, like being guided by these two characters who were Erato, you know, like Erato is the guardian angel of the story, the like, narrates through a voiceover because she's mute, and then El Boticario, who like breaks the fourth wall and like talks directly at camera, and he's the other narrator, and he's the devil personified as the bartender of Babel, right? So I actually started dreaming with these two characters where they guided me around the city and like showed me where the characters lived and stuff. So it was like super weird and mystical in that way, and of course like I grabbed some of that and inserted into the script. So that's the process.
Beautiful, by the way, beautiful. Like I'm a writer too, so the idea of like dreaming about your characters is, that's amazing. Amazing. What I was gonna ask, so because like you were doing this on your own and like producing it, I noticed like your locations and some of the production, was this a lot of on set or on location shoots? There's one area of the film specifically that I remember where there's like a Michelangelo Statue of Liberty kind of thing. I'm curious, like, how do you go about filming these locations?
Yeah, for sure. So everything was shot on location.
Okay.
There's literally no studios in my city. So everything was shot on location. We did rent an like a 1920s Art Deco building, and every like it was like empty, you know, like it, like no one lived there except on one floor. So we like rented the whole building, and every floor was kind of like our studio. So we built a different set in every floor. So that was really fun. And then also the motel, actually the My Little Pony. It's actually a real motel from my city. It's called the Motel Kiss Me, and it's like a thematic motel. We did intervene a bit of it for the movie. But for example, if people go to Cali and they want to like spend the night there with their partner, you know, like they can go to the Polar Room, they can go to the Egyptian Room. And like it does, you know, like it does have this like 20-foot statue of the Venus de Milo, which is so fun. I love shooting there. It was wild, you know, like the polar bears, the staircase. There's even a staircase like that says Galactic, you know, and I was like, this is perfect.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was, like, watching it going, and she got some great places in there. And I was, like, when I saw that statue, I was, like, where is this place? but, yeah, it's very good. I'm curious also about so you have a very colorful film. Very colorful. Like, I felt, like, a little bit of, like, Like there was a little Baz Luhrmann in there, like very just vibrant and pretty. I'm kind of curious about your process with how you were doing the costume and production design. I'm assuming it's Cuban influence. If you want to talk about that, I thought the costume production design was beautiful.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we worked alongside Jaime Luna, my production designer, and Felipe Giraldo, my costume designer, to again like create, like we wanted to craft this world that reflected kind of like the alternative Latin American youth, like the punk youth in Latin America, but also for it to be its own thing, you know, kind of like play with that retrofuturism, and just, again, you know, like create a vibe through the aesthetics that made you feel like you were right in the middle between reality and fantasy, you know? Yeah. Like the characters, some of the characters themselves are naturally like, they're very raw and very human and very realistic. And then they mix with these mythical characters, you know, like a guardian angel that personified the devil. So we wanted to create that, you know, like we wanted to be like right of the middle. So Latin American, like, you know, like paying homage to Latin American magical realism, but also with a punk twist.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, if we could get into the themes and the little deeper into like the story a little bit. So I live in Texas, which I don't know if you know anything about Texas.
Yeah, being in Texas. Yeah.
I deal with a lot of the problems that this film discusses. I'm also a person with disability. You can't see me, but I'm in a wheelchair right now. So I know how it feels to be treated different, you know, treated differently, like other. I noticed that you had a very interesting balance of discussing the spiritual, religion, and the LGBTQ trans experience. And I'm curious, for you, how did you manage that balance of, like, you know, talking about the gods, talking about the, you know, talking about angels and the gods, and quite a pretty beautiful, giving a beautiful message about how mankind, you know, handles religion in that way.
Thank you so much. That's actually a very interesting question. And there's two factors that influenced, you know, like the way that came through. And again, it's not like I had an agenda previously that, oh, this is what I want to say in the film. No, it's, again, it's a reflection of what I was going through at the moment, naturally. Yeah. You know? And so there's two aspects to it. First, I actually wanted to be a nun, not a filmmaker. So I think that makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
Actually, when I was 16, I wanted to be a nun. But like, first, there was a moment of my life where I wanted to be a Catholic nun, and then my mom just convinced me not to. And then I actually found a nunnery in Nepal of Buddhist nuns that do kung fu. When I was 16, I was like, "Oh wow, I'm ready to like shave my head, dress in orange, and go there." And my dad was like, "Okay, that's what you want for your life. I'll support you." And then my mom was like, "You're insane. You have to finish high school. Please." And then I finished high school. And once again, I was like, "Well, I'm ready to go now to Nepal." And then my mom said something that changed a little bit like the course of my life, which was like, "Why are you going to lock yourself up in a monastery in Nepal when you can, through your film, reach so many people with messages of love?"
Yeah.
And so that's a little bit of what I try to do in my work. You know, like I feel that it's so beautiful to empower people through storytelling, you know, like, and send messages of reconciliation because it's very much needed in our world, you know, like as filmmakers, we have a huge moral and social responsibility in regards to the quality of the stories that we tell, because people are consuming more content than food, you know? So what stories am I telling? Like, what kind of messages am I sending? Are they, you know, like, do they promote hate or do they promote love, you know? Like, what are people gonna stay with at the end? Yeah. And so, and then the other aspect, you know, like, and the reason why all my characters are in purgatory, you know, like that came because of a conversation I had with an exorcist priest. I actually met an exorcist priest during the pandemic. A lot of things happened during that time, you know, and there was a social strike in my city. A lot of buildings got burned. Young people were very angry at the government, unfortunately. And yeah, a lot of things happened, you know, like robberies, they ended up burning cars and so on. It was very scary. And so this exorcist priest was making an exorcism for the city, you know? And I got the chance to meet him. He's from a small, kind of like, he's Catholic, but like he follows a different path than like traditional Catholicism, that like follows one of the specific apostles. And he said to me, like, he's a mystic. This guy's a mystic. And he said, you know, the reason why we're stuck in the material world, because we feel guilt and we have not forgiven ourselves. We think that God needs to forgive us for some reason, you know, but God is pure love. He has already forgiven anything we've ever done. You know, we are the ones that have to forgive ourselves. And we're tied to this material world because of that, because we don't think that we are worthy of the kingdom of God in a way, you know. And that really struck with me. And I was like, wow, you know, like maybe we are in purgatory here in this material world, you know, like we're healing so much. And I think a huge thing is that, you know, like making peace with ourselves, you know, like with everything we've done in the past, and just kind of like, you know, kind of like realizing we are worthy of love. Yeah. Which, like, yeah.
That brings me to my next question, because I want to talk about Dante's Inferno.
Yeah.
May I, before I ask a question, can I tell you my interpretation of the film? Okay.
Yeah, I would love to hear it.
Before I get to my question, Dante's Inferno has to do with like him going through the nine realms of hell in order to get to paradise. Right. And what I noticed in the film is that, you know, one of the characters that is trans, and I don't know if it's an intentional choice or not, but they're going through hell in the film trying to love themselves. And then by the end, they're in paradise because they finally learn to love themselves in the way that Dante had to go through all the hell. Mm-hmm. But to love themselves. That was my interpretation. Now, I don't know if that was your intention, but I do think it's a beautiful message. Beautiful message. And I'm wondering first, what brought you to Dante's Inferno as inspiration? And what, you know, if you want to speak to it, you don't have to. You can let the film speak for itself if you wish, but what do you hope people get out?
That's so interesting. Well, in regards, and also that's so interesting that was your interpretation, because like another monk that I met, he told me once, you know, heaven and hell, they're here. You know, it is our state of consciousness what is not letting us see the heaven here, you know?
And I kind of agree with that.
I totally agree with that too. So I think that's just like everything that I've learned through these mentors has naturally seeped into the story and into like the kinds of stories that I tell. But in regards to Dante's Inferno, it was actually a happy accident, because one of the characters was named Dante, you know? And then once I realized the characters were in purgatory, because like I kind of like went with the flow and allowed the story to reveal itself to me during several months. And once they had like the fully built story, that's when I realized, oh, this is like a Latin American take on Dante's Inferno, you know? one of the characters was named Dante Alighieri, actually. And then his lover is Jean Salai, who was actually the lover of Leonardo da Vinci in real life. So I was just like playing with these characters, you know. So in that sense, it was a happy accident, but everything happens for a reason. And I believe there's no coincidences. So like this film that in a way was revealed through dreams, that's what it amounted to, you know, like, it's also like great. I love that. Like, I just love playing with, you know, like mythical, stories. And I feel that in a way, you know, like grabbing, we all do this, like all storytellers do this, you know, like we grab stories that already exist and we make them our own.
Yeah, we do.
The important thing is to put your signature on it, you know. And also something that I kept reminding myself is like to have patience and like believe in the process of like writing and rewriting, and maybe like trusting that like something beautiful will come out of what I was doing at the time, even if I didn't know exactly what it was, you know, to just avoid writer's block, you know, which is related to her other question. It's like, I feel that so many of my peers get blocked because, and sometimes me too, you know, like, because we have such high expectations of what we're doing and we don't want to like blow those expectations up. And so we end up not working. We end up like, procrastinating or writing, you know, but that was something important, you know, like to trust the process. And then in regards to the other question, so you said Dante Vernon, the other one was?
The other one was like, you know, I gave you my interpretation, but like, what do you hope that people, you know, it doesn't gotta be anything but like specific, but you know, whenever they walk away, what do you hope somebody feels, you know, they come out of this?
That's beautiful. Well, I guess to be 100% honest, I feel that everyone's gonna have their own interpretation, and there's some people who are gonna like it and some people who are not, based on their own life experiences, you know. But the goal of the film when we started writing it was to allow people to heal through the characters, you know, because ourselves, when we were writing it, we were trying to heal aspects of our lives, you know, and like questions that we had. So we hope that, you know, like if we were able to heal ourselves, someone who might watch the film in the future will be able to heal as well, you know. So that's it. But then obviously a big part of it, and I think it's important to say, it's a message of respect and allowing people to be, you know, like, as well.
Be themselves, right?
Exactly. Unapologetically be themselves.
Before we go, I think we're almost out of time. Again, I want to congratulate you on everything you've done. I know it's a process. You know, you wear many hats as a filmmaker. I know you have a, hold on, I got it written down here. I know you have some more projects down the line, something called Moonchild and Ascension. Do you have any other major plans down the pipeline?
I hope to just, you know, like keep making films in the future. It's hard to be an independent filmmaker. I'm not going to lie. I've reconsidered my career like 60 times while making this feature.
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
But I love what I do. I love what I do. I love creating. I also love representing Latin America in a world stage and like crafting local stories, but for global audiences. So that's what I hope to keep doing in the future. Then hopefully keep collaborating with the US, with European countries as well. Again, you know, like to craft stories that hopefully, you know, like transcend the screen and change something in people's hearts.
Awesome. Wonderful. Hey, it was wonderful to meet you. Thank you again for the interview. Have fun at Sundance.
Yep.
No matter what happens, have a great time. Okay.
So much,
and if, David. And if Sam is still here, thank you, Sam. Thank you. Y'all have a wonderful day.
Thank you, you too. And thank you for the interest.